Chapter 22. Before approaching Chotek to sell my next idea, I wanted to make damn sure we didn't have a better option, that Skippy didn't think we had any options at all. "So that's it, then? We give up?" I asked him after we got back to base camp. Skippy sighed, or did a good imitation of a sigh, since beer cans do not have lungs. "Giving up sounds like I'm a quitter. Could we instead say that I am making a rational assessment of the situation? Call it whatever you like, you are still telling me to stop looking for a conduit. I'm telling you, it is a waste of time to search for a conduit on this planet, Joe. Clearly the Elders dismantled, took away, or destroyed almost every useful piece of technology before they departed. We are not going to find a conduit here. You don't know that. Joe, please, let's cut the crap, and you stop trying to give me a pep talk, okay? You suck at it. No, I do not know for absolute certainty that there is not a functional conduit somewhere on Gingerbread. I do know with like 99.999% accuracy that there is unlikely to be a functional conduit on this planet. The only way we could find one is if the godlike beings we call the Elders forgot about one and left it behind. Realistically, I do not see that happening. Fine. No way was I going to argue statistics with him. I could barely pronounce the word. What do you suggest we do? Sit around watching potatoes grow until you die? No. I suggest you do something at least potentially useful, like determining where to build a permanent settlement and get started on it. That is still given up, Skippy. Anything we do to prepare for staying here long term is given up. I want to get off this planet, out of this star system, and go find a conduit for you someplace else. I held up a finger to shush him, and to my surprise it worked. Look, it may be a silly waste of time, but I need to feel like I am doing something useful. The Dutchman survived passing close to the star, so we will have a sort of ship up there. I want to see if we can find enough parts in the space junkyard up there to patch together a starship. If we have transport out of here, we still have a shred of hope. Count Chocula is going to tell you that is a waste of time and resources, and for once I agree with him. The Dutchman did survive, but that strain on the lifeboat's reactor has meant I had to almost shut it down. There is very little power aboard what used to be our ship. Will you help? All we need is one dropship and a couple pilots. Any of our pilots would jump at the chance to get off this rock while we still can. This may be their last chance. My willingness to go isn't your only problem. If you are going to inspect the junkyard up there, you need to take a condor and a full load of fuel, including supplemental tanks. With all the low-level flying we've done for surveys down here, we don't have the fuel to spare. I thought about that. When we were in those tunnels, you said the geothermal power systems are still active? Some of them, why? Because if we have a power source, we can synthesize fuel, right? Hell, with enough power, we can make fuel out of air. Technically, you are correct, and we did bring a synthesizer apparatus with us, two of them, actually. Okay, if you are determined to do this, I'll help however I can. Joe, you know when Chotek hears your plan to use geothermal power to run synthesizers, he will want those units producing something more practical than dropship fuel. Why? I winked. Like you said, we need to find a place for a permanent settlement on this planet, and then we need to move people and all our gear there. We also need to fly recon patrols to make sure no nasties like Theranin are sneaking up on us. That means a lot of flying time, and that takes a lot of fuel. They won't miss one tankful. It will take considerably more than one tankful to get off this planet and fly somewhere useful, Joe. Your biggest obstacle is not obtaining fuel. It will be getting Chotek to approve a plan he is certain to view as a waste of resources. Chotek will not be a problem, Skippy. I'll tell him we will be looking for usable technology up there in the junkyard, even if we can't rebuild the Dutchman. Besides, you are forgetting my greatest asset. What's that? Chotek would love for me to be away from this planet for a couple months while he builds his little kingdom down here. I was right. After a moderate amount of arguing that seemed like he was merely going through the motions, my boss granted permission for me to leave the planet, and he didn't even ask how long I would be gone. What he cared about was that we would have a steady supply of fuel for dropships, and once we had hooked up a synthesizer to a geothermal power source and demonstrated making quality fuel, he lost interest in what I was doing. 3 weeks later, With tanks so full, the Condor groaned from the effort of taking off. We left Gingerbread behind. Another Condor topped off our fuel in high orbit, and then we were gone, beyond the stealth field. To maintain communications with the surface, we deployed satellites and high-altitude balloons to relay signals. Bandwidth would be skimpy, so we could only get simple text messages through, and that was fine with both me and Hans Chotek. I was free. Free is a relative term. I was stuck aboard a Theranan dropship with five other people, holds jammed with fuel and supplies, and we still had no way to get away from the star system. Skippy's battle with the worm was still counting down to 0 hour, and searching an ancient junkyard full of broken alien ships may be a tremendous waste of time. What I cared about was that it felt like I was doing something useful, or something that might be useful, despite the odds against it. Desai, Reed, and the three other pilots mostly cared they had one last opportunity to fly a spacecraft before we all became subsistence farmers like the humans on Paradise. So, our Condor had plenty of fuel, bland but sufficient food, and one shiny beer can. I was hoping this would be the most epic road trip ever. This sucks, I mumbled less than a month later. I warned you, don't remind me, Skippy, I snapped back at Skippy. Hey, I wasn't the one who thought coming out here would be a super fun family adventure. You're like the dad who gets the family in the car, drives 6 hours to the Museum of Dusty Relics, and is surprised everyone didn't enjoy the trip. I said, don't remind me. Someone has to. Crap. I was hanging in space, tethered to the Condor, just returned from yet another fruitless trip to inspect alien junk. This time, it was part of a Theranan ship that Skippy estimated was 20,000 years old. From the spinning hulk that massed over 8,000 tons, we were able to recover 3 jump coils. 3. Skippy didn't even know if those 3 were usable. All we could see was those 3 were the only ones with microfractures in their matrices. 3 measly coils were not going to get the Flying Dutchman anywhere. We also found a surprising amount of fuel in the Hulk's tanks, although the reactors had sheared away, so there was no place to use the fuel. And we recovered part of a jump drive controller. Skippy didn't know if he could use it, but it wasn't large or heavy, so we took it with us anyway. The fuel we found in the tanks wasn't compatible with the Condor's engines, damn it. If we found or could build a reactor, we could always come back for the fuel. That Hulk wasn't going anywhere. Thus far, our epic journey to the stars was, as Hans Chotek predicted, an epic waste of time. After the first couple days, my boss only bothered to contact me once a week, and that was in response to the rather thin progress reports I had sent. The people on Gingerbread had made actual progress. They had located a site to build a settlement and were already transferring people and supplies there. The site sounded nice. It was next to a river and just upstream from a large lake. Winters there were mild, and perhaps the best feature of that site was another geothermal power source was there. One of the synthesizers was being relocated and should be producing dropship fuel soon. Major Sims had a team clearing land and planting test crops. I could not picture the Spec Ops team settling down to live like Little House on the Prairie, but I certainly could not criticize them. They were dealing with reality as best they could, while I was only delaying the inevitable by flying around looking at ancient space junk. We had plenty of fuel, we had plenty of food, we had plenty of floating scrap to investigate in the orbital junkyard. What the 6 of us were running out of was patience and enthusiasm. Right from the beginning, our flight was a desperation move, a Hail Mary. I'd pushed to explore the junkyard in part because we just might find something useful out there, but I knew the reality was my main motivation in flying off-world was to delay facing the fact that Skippy was going to die soon and the merry band of pirates would be trapped on Gingerbread, probably forever. I justified my refusal to accept reality because reality totally sucked, so it's reality's fault. Desai, I'm coming in, I announced after indulging myself for a long minute of staring at the stars. Let's wrap this up. There's nothing useful here we don't already have aboard. Yes, Colonel, she replied from the cockpit. Desai had been the first pilot to volunteer for our useless goose chase, and of course I approved her coming with me. If this were the last time we ever flew, I wanted her with me. Set course for the next target? Sure, I responded without enthusiasm. Then, remembering that I had to set the tone for all six of us, I added, I promise no negative thoughts this time. The next target is going to be a jackpot of gear we can use to fix up the old Dutchman, guaranteed.
Yes, sir, she said with a chuckle that sounded forced. It's only a 4-day trip from here. We'll know if you're right soon enough.
Joe, we got's a problem. Skippy's voice broke me out of a daydream and I scrambled to pull myself back to the present. There was no problem with our Condor. I knew that because the display in front of me was not showing any alerts, and the pilots up in the cockpit would have notified me. That left some very bad possibilities, like Skippy losing control of the Guardians and then tearing our dropship apart, or the worm attacking Skippy again. What is it? In the passenger compartment, I had been loosely strapped into a seat. Standard procedure while the Condor was coasting toward our next target. Desai had fired the engines for about half an hour and then cut thrust. We wouldn't use the main jets again until we needed to decelerate to match course and speed with the pile of spinning ancient junk that was our next target to explore. Until then, the six of us floated around in zero gravity and exercised awkwardly to prevent our muscles from wasting away. Sorry to startle you, there is no immediate danger, he assured me. The orbits of the planets in this system are not natural. Not possible. There's an entire planet missing. Hearing that gave me a chill. Oh, crap. Is this like Newark, where Newark got pushed out of its original orbit, that disrupted the orbits of the other planets and the innermost planet fell into the star? No. Well, yes, there was an inner planet here, one that originally wasn't there at all. I speculate that... Hold on. Go back a minute. What do you mean the inner planet wasn't originally there? Skippy sighed. Now I have to explain orbital mechanics to you. His voice was incredulous. Can I hit the highlights and skip the math? Probably a good idea, I admitted. Okay, here goes nothing. Joe, running the math backwards, shows me the Roach Motel used to have a Saturn-sized gas giant planet orbiting close to the star. Close like the star's gravity well was siphoning off the planet's atmosphere. I thought gas giant planets didn't form so close to a star. Very good, Joey, get yourself a juice box. Gas giants normally do not form so close to a star, and this planet didn't form there. This planet originally orbited far from the star, out deep in the Oort cloud. The elders must have towed it near the star. Towed? Holy shit. Of course they could do that. Wow, moving a big planet like that through the system must have caused havoc with the other planets. It would have required the Elders to stabilize the other planets during and after the transition. Most likely, the Elders jumped the planet through a temporary wormhole to avoid it passing through the orbits of other planets. I simply shook my head. The works of the Elders blew my mind. They jumped a planet through a wormhole. Skippy once told me they had jumped a supergiant blue-white star through a wormhole, jumped it outside the galaxy. Beings like that, I could not comprehend. No wonder Skippy was so awesome. He had been built by beings to whom awesomeness was commonplace. Let's skip the part where I ask you how the hell anyone can jump a planet through a wormhole and get to my next question. Why? Why would they want to reposition a planet close to a star? A gas giant planet, Joe. That's the key. I am speculating, but my guess is the Elders used the planet to slowly replenish the star's hydrogen. Pushing the planet into the star would have been too disruptive, so they placed the planet where its atmosphere would be gradually siphoned off. That technique can stretch out the life of a star's main phase. If the Elders were tapping the star for power, as I suspect they were and still are, they are shortening the star's useful life. The further back I run the math, the more fuzzy it is. But I think the Elders used at least two gas giant planets to replenish the star over the eons. Wow. Wow. So when you said a planet is missing, you meant that over time, the star sucked up the entire gas giant planet? No. Damn, talking with you is frustrating. You ask too many questions. What I meant is that innermost gas giant planet fell into the star much earlier than it was supposed to. Gas giants have rocky cores. When all the gas had been siphoned off, the Elders likely planned to crash the useless core remnant into the star. What I think happened is the gas giant fell into the star while it was still a giant.
The Elders pushed it into the star the same way someone pushed Newark out past its original orbit? No. Joe, technically there are 3 planets missing from this star system.
Crap, Skippy.
Crap indeed, Joe. There's the gas giant that fell into the star, plus a Neptune-sized planet that got ejected from the system. Technically, that planet is still orbiting the star, but it is so far away it takes 8,000 years for a single orbit. Because the math tells me roughly where that outer planet must be, I found it using the Dutchman's sensors. It's faint, but it's there.
Well, that's 2. What about the 3rd planet?
That is what puzzles me, Joe. The 3rd planet that is missing originally orbited just beyond where Gingerbread is, kind of like how Mars orbits beyond Earth. The missing planet was more massive than Mars. The math tells me it had about the mass of Venus.
Okay, and? Where did it go?
It didn't go anywhere, Joe. It just simply went poof and disappeared.
It's missing? Was its picture on a milk carton or something?
What?
Forget I said that. How is it possible for a whole planet to go missing?
It's not. Not even for the Elders. I thought possibly they jumped it somewhere, but doing that leaves a distinctive vibration pattern inside the star that would be detectable even after all this time. There is no such vibration.
I scratch my head. This is all great info, and it's a mystery to puzzle through another time, right? It's not actionable?
Actionable? You need to stop picking up buzzwords from PowerPoint slides. It is actionable, Joe, because I want us to fly over to where this planet should be so I can determine it better with this ship's crappy instruments.
Whoo, boy. That's going to be a tough sell to Chotek. How about we check out our next target and think about flying over to this phantom planet later?
Deal. If the phantom planet exists, it will take us a month to get there anyway. Plenty of derelict ships in the junkyard between here and there.
Hey! He exclaimed with delight.
You don't even need to tell Chotek at all. There are 2 large derelicts in the general area where I expect the phantom planet to be if it exists. Those derelicts are close enough for me to scan the area and determine whether we should go in for a closer look.
A closer look? At a planet that you think might not exist?
Well, it just sounds stupid when you say it like that, Joe.
Major Smythe.
Captain Giroux approached the Spec Ops team leader as the SAS man came out of a dreary meeting with Chotek and Sims, reviewing details of the site Chotek had selected for a permanent human settlement on Gingerbread.
"We have a decision?"
Smythe nodded.
"Yes, Chotek has selected a site. It's good enough, I suppose. Major Sims agrees the area is suitable for agriculture."
"He is serious about expending effort to build permanent structures while Skippy is still with us?"
"Captain, our civilian leader is planning a golf course,"
Smythe noted with a raised eyebrow.
"Golf?"
Giroux thought for a moment the remark had been missed in translation, then thought Smythe had been joking. The expression on Smythe's face made it clear his statement had not been a joke. Giroux lowered his voice.
"It is one thing to scout for a site, but it seems premature to dedicate our air power to transportation of supplies to build a settlement, while Colonel Bishop is still working to get us away from the star system."
"I agree, Captain. Orders are orders. I intend to confirm my instructions with Colonel Bishop. Chotek does not intend to begin a serious effort to move base camp for another month."
He looked up at the trees, which still had healthy green leaves. The climate model created by Skippy predicted nights at base camp would begin becoming cool in another 6 weeks, with winter approaching in 4 months. It was Smythe's turn to lower his voice. He glanced around to assure no one overheard the conversation.
"There is another matter I need to discuss with Colonel Bishop, if we truly are to be stranded on this planet. We need to do something about those Theranan. They may not be a threat to us now because we have a technological advantage, but in 10, 20, 50 years, our dropships will cease to be flight-worthy, and even for ground combat we have a limited supply of ammunition. I do not want our future generations to face the Theranan with our side armed only with bows and arrows."
Giroux nodded in grim agreement.
"We must hit them while we still have air power. You think Bishop will agree?"
"I won't ask him while he still hopes to fix Skippy's problem. But our commanding officer is a common-sense soldier," Smythe concluded.
"He will understand what we have to do."
I just finished a 4-hour shift as co-pilot of our Condor when Skippy made a strange, strangled sort of beeping sound, then went silent. Skippy, what was that? He had been quiet for several hours. I thought he was being nice and letting me concentrate on flying, although our dropship was currently coasting toward a cluster of parts from a derelict Theranin ship, so there was absolutely nothing for pilot or co-pilot to do. Major Desai had spent most of our 4 hours together putting me through simulations to improve my skills for flying the Condor. All I was trusted to do so far was routine maneuvers in space. Any tricky flying or flying in an atmosphere would have to wait for me to gain more experience. Skippy? He didn't respond at all. In a panic, I launched myself through the door into the main cabin where his beer can was strapped into a seat. No sooner had I reached the chair and reached out to shake him when he finally spoke and his avatar shimmered to life above the headrest of the seat. Hi, Joe, I thought you were flying. Skippy's voice sounded mildly disoriented. Whew, I had a little shock for a moment. Skippy, I waggled a finger at his avatar. If this is because I washed my own laundry this morning, that is not funny.
Nope, although that was a shock. Also, you did it wrong.
What is the problem, then?
Joe, we're in potential danger.
Wow, I clapped my hands. That's great news, Skippy, thank you.
Huh?
Hey, usually the merry band of pirates are in actual no-kidding, oh-my-God, pee-in-my-pants danger. To only be in potential danger is a huge improvement.
Oh, that is a good point.
We've already got these guardians swarming around us, a ship broken in pieces, your firewall is losing power, and we haven't been able to find the conduit thingy to fix you. What is the problem now?
I don't want to alarm you.
Yeah, but you're going to do it anyway.
Right. Those other problems you mentioned. This new danger is kind of an order of magnitude worse. Like, infinitely worse.
What the hell is it, Skippy?
There's a sentinel here?
Oh, shit. A freaking sentinel? Like
a giant, unstoppable elder killing machine that can stomp the Rindaloo like bugs.
That was a good one, because the Rindaloo are sort of spiders, like bugs.
Oh, yeah, that was freaking hilarious, Skippy.
Really, I would have been surprised if there wasn't a sentinel or two around here somewhere.
Why the hell didn't you mention that before? I demanded.
Would you have brought the ship to the Roach Motel if you knew there were sentinels here?
Hell no!
Crap, did I just answer my own question?
You think?
Joey, if I told you this system likely contained sentinels, you would have gone all, ooh, too dangerous on me.
His avatar waggled its fingers in the air as if frightened.
And we wouldn't have come here.
Yeah, and then we would have a ship in one piece. Plus, we've accomplished so much since we got here. Like, nothing.
Yet. We haven't accomplished anything yet, Joe. Have faith.
Have faith.
So says the beer can who failed to tell me about the unstoppable killing machine and brought us to this dead-end star system.
Joe, in my defense, there are sentinels scattered across the galaxy. Normally, they are dormant, and they are actually in another phase of space-time. As far as I know, the last time any of them were active was when the Maxalks used Elder devices to attack the Rindaloo. That woke up the sentinels, and after they stomped the Maxalks and Rindaloo back to the Stone Age, they went dormant again.
And we woke up this one?
No. No, in fact, that is what shocked me.
Joe, this sentinel is not dormant, it's dead. I think it's been dead a long, long time. All I found was a broken piece of it.
Dead? How could that happen?
Hence the source of my shock. What in this universe could kill a sentinel?
His avatar shuddered.
This scares the shit out of me, Joe.
It scares me too, Skippy.
What do you mean by dead?
It is not generating or using any power. It is tumbling out of control. I pinged it, and it did not respond.
You pinged it?
Yes.
Duh. How else was I supposed to? You found a giant, super-powerful killing machine that is guarding an Elder star system we are ransacking, and your best idea was to say, hey, how you doing?
Oh. Sorry. In retrospect, that may not have been my best idea ever.
Anywho, no harm, no foul, right?
No harm so far, you little shithead. You said there could be more than one sentinel here. What if your ping woke up another one?
I said I was sorry, Joe. Jeez Louise, let it go, will you?
I just glared at him in disbelief.
Skippy, are you experiencing another cognitive deficit or whatever you call it when you act like you're drunk?
No. Why?
No reason.
Other than you just doing the single dumbest thing you've ever done.
Oh.
He laughed nervously.
That was the single dumbest thing you know of, Joe. Truthfully, pinging a sentinel isn't even in my top 10.
Damn, I have done some really stupid shit I haven't told you about, and...
Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
You think?
Okay, so where is this sentinel? We'll back away from it real easy and...
What? Back away from it?
His avatar folded its arms across its chest.
No, dum-dum, we need to rendezvous with it.
I stared at the avatar for a long second, then shook my head incredulously.
Excuse me? Pinging the damn thing wasn't good enough, now we need to go knock on the front door?
No one's home, Joe, trust me.
Trust you? Right after telling me you've done some stupid shit I don't even know about?
Ugh, your meat sack memory is terribly inefficient. I should be able to erase your memory of what I said just then, but no, you freaking monkeys remember all the wrong stuff.
Yes, Joe, we need to fly over to this sentinel and check it out.
Because... Whatever you say next, it better be good, Skippy, like, epically good.
It is, Joe. It is almost certain we can find a conduit inside that sentinel.
Oh, crap. That actually was a good reason for us to go poking our noses in places our noses did not belong.
Almost certain?
Like, I would give 1,000,000,000 to 1 odds that we will find a conduit there. Using conduit capability to manipulate local space-time is how sentinels function. That capability is how they reside in and draw power from higher dimensions. It is how they can disrupt stars and tear starships apart. Guardians use a similar technology, although on a much lower scale, and conduits are not native to Guardians. They just temporarily use conduits located outside this space-time.
Uh-huh. I was underwhelmed.
Come on, Joe. This is exciting. We finally found what I need to fix myself.
Maybe. We might have found a conduit we can use. We've had 2 failures with conduits we've found so far.
What makes you think a conduit inside a broken sentinel will still be functional?
Because it will not be a conduit. Considering the size of the fragment I found, there should be hundreds of devices I can use as a conduit. We only need one.
Joe, let me talk, please.
His avatar held up a finger to shush me.
This is our golden opportunity. I didn't mention it to you before because there is no reason to worry you about things you can't control, but over the past 48 hours, the worm has been increasingly active. To combat it, I am draining more and more power from my internal reserves. If we don't find a conduit soon, like within the next 12 days, I am likely toast. And so are you in the long run.
Crap. Skippy, in the future, I do need to worry about that type of thing.
Okay, tell me one thing. If you are certain a sentinel has the conduit capability you need, why didn't you contact one when we got here?
Because a live sentinel would most likely stomp me flat for violating, like, every rule the elders have, he responded quietly, and didn't even add the usual implied duh in his tone.
The only reason the sentinel I found is an opportunity rather than a danger is that it's dead as a doornail. The idea that anything in this galaxy can kill a sentinel scares the shit out of me, but this one is dead.
12 days, huh? I rubbed my chin, and Skippy's avatar took on a pitiful, helpless expression he must have learned from watching sad puppies on Instagram.
How long for us to get to the Sentinel?
Just over 5 days at maximum acceleration. To be precise, 121 hours, 38 minutes, and
that's precise enough, thank you.
Oh, hell. I felt a whopping headache coming on already.
I need to get an okay from Chotek about this.
Messing with a sentinel was something our mission commander was not going to like one bit.
Time for a round-trip signal to Gingerbread is?
I checked the display, but Desai answered for me.
16 minutes, Colonel, she replied,
and looked at me with one eyebrow raised and one finger poised over the autopilot button. I nodded as I relaxed back in my seat and engaged the safety straps for acceleration.
Get us moving toward the Sentinel, Desai. We'll need all the time we can get if Chotek approves this crazy plan.
Yes, sir, she acknowledged.
Prepare for sustained acceleration.
She turned to look me straight in the eye.
What if Mr. Chotek does not approve us approaching a Sentinel?
Then I took a deep breath. I will have a decision to make.
29 minutes later, we received a short message. Take no action at this time. Instructions to follow. That was Chotek's way of telling me he was thinking about it, and that I should wait for his decision. As we were already burning hard to intercept the Sentinel, I interpreted take no action to mean that we should take no action to cease our acceleration. I know that was bullshit, but I was grasping at straws.
Skippy, are there any potential junkyard targets along our current course?
Whew. Technically, no, but if we alter course within the next 48 minutes, we could reach a cluster of potentially useful junk. After that, we will be headed away from any plausible targets for our original mission.
48 minutes, I repeated thoughtfully. It will take 8 minutes for Chotek's signal to reach us out here, so he has another 40 minutes to make up his mind.
In my message to him about the Sentinel, I had included the information that Skippy estimated the worm would get past his eternal defenses within 12 days. While that should have impressed on our mission commander the urgency of the situation, and that the broken Sentinel may be our last hope to fix Skippy, I don't know if Chotek would believe me. He may think I faked Skippy's 12-day deadline as a way to convince him to approve the mission to the Sentinel. My credibility with our mission leader was not the best. It was frustrating that the speed of light time lag had made it impossible to have a real conversation. We did not have to wait 48 minutes for an answer. A second message was received 7 minutes later. Chotek denied permission for us to investigate the Sentinel, and further, he ordered me to avoid coming anywhere near the dangerous Elder Machine. Chotek thought the risk was too great that us poking around a Sentinel, even one supposedly dead, would trigger other Sentinels to destroy humanity's home planet.
Colonel?
Desai looked at me expectantly. The message had been directed to me personally, so she hadn't read it.
Now what the hell was I going to do?
A quick glance at the clock told me we had another 41 minutes until I would be directly violating orders.
Continue on present course, I told Desai, and the tone of my voice must have alerted her to the content of Chotek's message.
We have another 41 minutes before we are technically violating orders, I explained, so Desai did not have to participate in the mutiny.
Yes, sir, she replied quietly, avoiding my eyes.
She sat stiffly in her couch, with one finger tapping slowly on a blank part of the flat-screen controls, like she was working up to say something to me.
Desai, I'm going to request a confirmation. I looked down at my own console and began typing, partly to avoid a discussion with her.
41 minutes. I had 41 minutes to decide whether I was a United States Army soldier or a pirate. If I was a pirate, then there were no rules, no restrictions on our conduct. I would be representing myself rather than humanity, and I would be substituting my own inexperienced judgment for that of UNEF command in the form of Hans Chotek. A mutiny would be easy to do, except for two things. First, Chotek had been right, and I had been wrong about us going to paradise. On my own, I would not have taken the ship there to check on the status of humans trapped on that planet. I'd been afraid of learning humans there were in danger that we couldn't do anything about. Humans on Paradise had been in danger, but we had found a way to secure their future. Being wrong about that issue had been a humbling experience for me. Until then, I had been feeling pretty cocky about saving Earth twice. Chotek had also been right about insisting we perform an intermediate jump to Recon Bravo before approaching that site. If we had followed my plan, the Dutchman would have been trapped by the powerful damping fields of a Theranan task force. About Paradise and about Bravo, Chotek's judgment had been better than mine. The second thing that held me back from mutiny was the nagging feeling that maybe, just maybe, Chotek was right again this time. Maybe us messing with the Sentinel, even if doing that could fix Skippy, was not worth the risk of provoking other Sentinels.
It was a judgment call. And the entire reason UNEF Command had assigned Hans Chotek as our mission commander was to make important judgment calls. Because UNEF Command didn't trust my judgment. Maybe they were right. I had an emotional connection with Skippy.
my ability to think objectively might be impaired. I had 41 minutes to think about that. Margaret Adams was not invited to the emergency meeting in Chotek's tent. That audience had been limited to Lieutenant Colonel Chang, Major Smythe, and Major Sims. All she knew was that a message had been sent from Colonel Bishop to Chotek that three senior officers had been called away from their regular duties, and when he came out of the meeting, Smythe's face was as grim as Adams had ever seen it. She had arranged to be in the path between tents that Smythe was likely to take after leaving Chotek. "Major, what's going on?" Smythe shot a look back over his shoulder to where the flap of Chotek's tent was just closing. The mission commander had not instructed the three officers to keep quiet about the subject of the meeting, which would have been foolish anyway. "Walk with me, Sergeant," Smythe said, in more of a request than an order. "Bishop located a sentinel out there." "A sentinel?" Adams gasped, a chill of fear running up her spine. "I can see how you don't understand." Smythe shook his head curtly, motioning her into a side passageway. "Skippy reported the sentinel is dead. What they located is only a broken fragment." Adams's shoulders remained tense. "No danger, then?" she asked, thinking that was unlikely given the expression on the SAS man's face. "Not according to Skippy. He wants to explore the fragment in hope of finding a conduit. Apparently there is a strong probability a conduit will be found inside what is left of the machine. Bishop agrees, and requested permission to proceed toward the site to investigate with a proximity sensor scan." Adams understood the source of Smythe's unhappiness. "And our fearless—" she caught herself, aware she was speaking with an officer. "Our mission commander refused permission?" "Quite so." Smythe's eyes narrowed, judging her reaction to the news. "There is a complication. Bishop reported Skippy estimates he has only 12 days remaining until the worm breaks through his defenses." 12 days to 0 hour? Adams cocked her head. That couldn't be the whole story. A deadline like that should be a strong reason to search that sentinel for a conduit. It is a strong reason, Chotek agrees. He thinks perhaps it is too strong. Too convenient that Skippy's failure is imminent at the same time we have a hazardous opportunity to find the one thing that could fix our AI. Chotek thinks Bishop is lying about it? Margaret Adams was astonished and angry. There is unfortunately not a large reservoir of trust between our mission commander and our captain. Chotek may think Bishop is exaggerating or revealing only the facts that support his request, or that Skippy is lying to Bishop, or guessing. There is no trust between Chotek and the— Smythe's jaw worked side to side as if he were chewing on something unpleasant. Beer can. That lack of trust is Skippy's own fault. Where are you going, Sergeant? Smythe asked as she strode past him. To speak with our mission commander.